And we are back with episode 361 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Dad? Edmund from Greenville. And, replacing Dexter on my list with Revolution. Not sure how that's working out.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I was just so thrilled to see the flying car. It was a really classic S.H.I.E.L.D. bit that I enjoyed seeing.
And this is Bronson from Australia, and I almost wish they'd gone with the demon parasite thingy.
You were really reaching there for something, weren't you? But at any rate. All right, we are going to be talking a few quick hits here, and then we'll see what kind of time we have after that for a little bit of an open discussion. But first, Edmund, if you could please.
We will discuss all sorts of things about these episodes, so you're quite likely to be spoiled. They've been out about a week or so, hopefully you've had a chance to catch up.
That's right. And let's go ahead first. And foremost in our quick hits here, Sleepy Hollow's Season 1, Episode 2, Blood Moon. A scary vision from Ichabod's former wife, Katrina, sends him and Abby on a hunt for an 18th century witch who's out for revenge in Sleepy Hollow. Meanwhile, Andy returns to the Force and undertakes a questionable mission. Henry gave this one a 7 out of 10. And who here among us watched this episode, actually?
I saw a little.
Edmund?
I just caught it now.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. Let's start with Edmund, then. What were your thoughts on this one, real quick?
Yeah, it's still holding my interest. Getting through the pilot and into the main run. The thing I actually took out of it more than the sort of main plot was I wasn't quite sure at the end there how I feel about this whole thing. Okay, now we know why Clancy Brown is actually in the opening credits. He is apparently going to be hanging around as yet another ghostly figure to be advising one of our main characters. Very similar to another show that we're about to discuss that just ended, thankfully. It's certainly keeping with the pilot in terms of just sort of throwing all sorts of stuff into the episode, and I thought they did a decent job again keeping the action going and sort of moving so fast that if what holes there might be it's kind of moving too fast for you to pick up on them. I think I'd agree with Henry 7. It was a perfectly adequate episode, but we still need to see as it gets into its run. How they're pulling together these this huge amount of conspiracy and back plot that's going on.
Yeah, I really thought it was going to be sort of more focused on the Headless Horseman now to bring in this other witch and really start to elaborate on his wife's role in this whole situation, as well as starting to discover his role in the previous situation. I like it, but I like that it's not just being stuck with the Horseman trope as its sole focus for the show. That it gives me encouragement that it'll expand and grow into something that we'll like to watch. But I agree, it did seem like they were basically scooping up a bucket of ideas and just chucking it into the script and seeing what holds up.
Yep, those producers strike again. Bronstone, you said you had watched it?
I just finished watching just before we started recording. And I think, like the first episode, it had a solid performances and a mythology that I found... like properly interesting. Like it's kind of supernatural-esque. The show Supernatural, not just vaguely weird stuff. While kind of at the same time, the way I've taken to describing the show to particularly nerdy people, it's like Being Human US and Haven had a baby. And that really on here that. So,
whoa, okay, some weird stuff going on there.
This town is really kind of the vibe of this town is this small town is really creepy. The mythology is interesting, and I think it's going to be able to sustain itself long term. The actual mystery of the week or the bad guy of the week was okay, it was enough to kind of get me through the episode, but it was more interesting in how it led the characters into finding out a bit more information about what's going on within this town. So, to my own great surprise, I'm finding I'm actually, you know, liking the show. It's not blowing my socks, but it's no Revolution.
Well, thank God for that. Yeah, we'll get to that. Don't worry. So, what would you give this one? Do you think?
I think I go with 7 out of 10. It was, you know, it was average. It was pretty solid. It feels like this episode is giving us more of an indication the show is going to be like week to week. Something that pilot episodes really have a time doing, and if this is what the show's going to be week to week, you know what? I'm okay with that. I'll tag along. So 7 out of 10.
Yeah, my thought on this one was that it reminded me a lot of if Grimm and Once Upon a Time were kind of thrown together in a blender. What would you get? And that's this show, because obviously there are a lot of comparisons one could make to Grimm. I'm still going to stick with the 7 as well. I think that it's a perfectly average start to the show. There's potential to do better, but it still hasn't quite gelled for me yet. So I guess we'll find out. All right, well, there was, of course, another show that was on recently that had similar problems, and that would be returning very recently, Revolution, Season 2, Episode 1, Born in the USA. At least they didn't run the song in the actual episode, right? In the Season 2 premiere, Miles, Aaron, and Rachel find themselves in a small town in Texas, where Rachel comes across a figure from her past. Charlie is on a mission in the Plains Nation, and Neville and Jason search a refugee camp for a loved one. All right, now, who watched this one?
I did.
Okay, you actually admit to it. That's nice.
Yeah.
You did too?
Yeah, no, I decided to jump in as well, since I missed all of the end of the first season, so I figured since they kept talking about rebooting things, I'd see how the reboot had gone.
And yet you were perfectly able to pick up on everything, weren't you?
Well, as
yeah,
as
pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, they were certainly doing enough of the, you know, yes, having the characters tell us some of the stuff that happened at the end of last season. So, I think they were kind of anticipating this reaction.
Oh yeah, I mean, even with the flashback scenes and things like that, it was more than just exposition. So.
Well, they said they were going to follow through, and at least it seemed to me like they did.
Well, except for the electricity, you know, I thought it was going to stay on. I was a little surprised, honestly, when it wasn't. And then but they did carry through on the bombing of both Atlanta and Philadelphia, which I was grateful that they went through with some of it, even if they didn't go through all the way. But you know, things are, you know, really different. And as they were saying in our teaser, which was somewhat informative, actually, as opposed to the way they usually are. Rachel, Miles, and Aaron, and at one point Charlie, all went to, I don't know if they actually said where in Texas it was, but to where Rachel's father and Charlie's grandfather was, and a hold up in a little town. And we didn't get the sense whether they were headed back and just stayed there or just, you know, that was just a layover point for a little while. And so I guess the sense for Miles it was, and even for Charlie it was, but Rachel seems so broken, I guess might be the best word for it, that, you know, she needs that stability that I guess her father and home is offering her at this time. It's probably something rare that people can have nowadays in that world. We get to see Miles pull out a sword and give us the, dare I say, obligatory sword fight of the episode. And then we see Charlie, well, she says she's on a mission. I didn't get the sense it was a mission, at least not at first. But anyway, she runs across Monroe, who's now a fighting for money every night in sort of fight games type of thing. And just as she's about to kill him, he gets hijacked. So and now she goes in hunt of him because, darn it, she's got to kill him. Nobody else is allowed to.
That's right. Just,
I found that as a little bit funny. And finally, I guess the one of the interesting twists, and I guess they need to do it to keep on Neville relevant, was that now that the, jeez, I don't even know, I guess the official United States, the President of the United States and his minions are starting, have come back now that the two big powerhouses on the East Coast have been destroyed, now focuses his anger upon them for supposedly killing his wife, who they were, who was the woman that they were searching for in the refugee camp, he and Jason. So, yeah, they did shake things up a little bit, and I was glad that they did. Now I'm sort of curious to see where they go, and I just don't really feel good motivations for why they're doing what they're doing. It all seems a little trite. I wish there was some ultimate goal and other than revenge, but that's all that seems to be on the plate this week.
All right. Well, what do you think you'd give it?
I'd probably give it a 7, mainly for, well, two reasons. One, which I didn't mention earlier, was Aaron dying and coming back to life after the commercial break, which was a heck of a surprise, and that they did actually carry through and go ahead and bomb Atlanta and Philadelphia. I would have given them more if they left the lights on so we could see how the world would play out with electricity. But something's happening with the electricity anyway, and I kind of like that. Whatever this Firefly light in the sky, reanimate people from death. It's almost an anti Walking Dead. I'm curious to see where some of these ideas are going to flesh out.
Mm, no pun intended. All right. Edmund, you said you watched it as well, and did you give a grade already?
I would say, I mean, that having dropped it and coming back to it, I mean, it still felt an awful lot like the show I left behind. You know, it wasn't quite the complete makeover I would have hoped for. I actually found myself when they started doing the flashbacks and things, you know, started getting, you know, odd flashbacks myself to the event, although luckily they didn't go quite to the ridiculous extents that did at the beginning with the 20 minutes before and 15 minutes afterwards stuff. But certainly, it bringing up comparisons like that, I mean, I will certainly stick with it, given who's involved, to see where they can take it. But for now, I mean, and I actually, after, you know, having all my bad memories of Aaron from that first half of the last season, I was actually thinking, wow, great, that's ballsy to you know, actually take him out immediately. And then so when he revived, I was actually a little disappointed.
Bloodthirsty Kerr.
I think I would actually stick with a 6 for this one.
Okay.
Still didn't quite pull together yet.
Yeah, I feel like it was better than I remember it being, a little bit, but I would probably stick with a 7 as well. I don't think that it's by any means a huge makeover. At the same time, I'm wondering how much they could really do in terms of a makeover when they still had to deal with some of the issues from last season, so, and kind of reintroduce things. So I do feel like there was a little more darkness to everything. Which was a nice touch. It actually made sense to me that this is probably the level of violence and desperation that they should have had right from the beginning. And it might have felt more authentic if they had done that, if that makes any sense.
Well, I know what you're saying, and I think that, well, that by destroying Philadelphia and Atlanta, you've gotten rid of these big set-up establishments, so it is a lot more loose and wild than the structure that we'd been introduced to.
Oh, I agree. I think that helped me at least to bring it up to a 7, but that's as far as I'm willing to go. So, and Bronstam, I'm assuming you did not watch this.
Probably doesn't sound like it.
No, it does not. It sounds like he may have fallen off the face of the earth. Or he's lagged.
I did not, no.
Okay, well, there you go. That answers my question about that. Well, okay. I'm sure, though, that you did watch what we're going to talk about next. I'll actually let you take the lead once I introduce it. And that would be, I have a feeling this is going to be interesting. Dexter, Season 8, Episode 12, Remember the Monsters? Extraneous question mark. Season 8 and the series concludes with Dexter facing impossible odds.
Yeah, I remember the monsters. They're called the Writers.
With a hurricane threatening Miami, Dexter becomes determined to end things his way. And obviously we have a bit of lag as, you know, we're using the tin cans and string in order to get in touch with Bronstone. But we'll go ahead and let him start off so that we can hopefully minimize the damage. Take it away.
This was terrible. This was a really, really abysmally, terribly, terribly, rubbishly, just awful finale.
Wow.
It started off boring, which is, you know, the exact note that you want to hit for a season finale, and then just dumb things started happening. Just the decision, the characters started making decisions that had absolutely no bearing on anything we'd really seen before. It was just the writers having this... It was like the writers were making this very last-ditch effort to be Breaking Bad in the sense of, well, let's actually try and have consequences, I guess, for all the seasons where our protagonist was a bad guy and got away with it, which just completely did not gel with what they had been doing this season and what they'd been doing for the first half of the episode, and just led to the characters making bizarre... just bizarre decisions and doing stupid things that had no bearing on the... Just this... This whole season, I think, could be characterized by squandered potential. Just even taking away the fact that they had Charlotte rambling on for 10 episodes and just didn't do anything with that character, they totally botched this, this finale. They... Like, I was angry. I finished this episode and I was, like, really just properly angry with the show and with the writers and with whoever it was that thought that this was a good conclusion. This was... Yeah, this was terrible. This was absolutely terrible. This was bedlam bad.
Mm, wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I agree completely. This was... You know, basically, I mean, you know, the show has been on this sort of downward spiral, you know, in its later seasons, and you know, and they just managed to completely hit rock bottom, yeah, I mean, essentially, it's a matter of, as Bronson said, there are also all sorts of bad decisions made. I mean, I don't even feel like justifying them by naming them. It's, what the heck? Just for one of the glaring examples is, you know, you have your serial killer actually kill somebody in a holding cell in police custody, who's in, you know, and manages to get away with it with a complete nod and a wink. And you know, after all of these seasons, there's been all this speculation of, you know, oh well, you know, Dexter's got to end. I mean, you know, either, you know, with him being, you know, with him being discovered or dying, or instead, it's, you know, no, they have to, I don't know if they're trying to keep the hopes of a spin-off or a sequel alive, but yeah, I mean, they managed to kill off Deborah, his sister, and have it feel basically, you know, have no impact whatsoever the way they did it. It was just really appalling, and, I have to give kudos out to Alan Sepinwall because he came up with the perfect tagline on the when he reviewed it of "I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay,"
because
evoking Monty
it's
Python for
okay.
That ending is but yeah, I mean, you know, because where they had Dexter wind up after supposedly dying, yeah, was just silly. but yeah, I mean, it really says something about this, you know, that essentially, you know, the internet is full of people's alternate versions of what this final episode or final season should have been, and pretty much every one of them is better than what wound up on screen. So, Bronza mentioned Bedlam levels, and I'm certainly more than happy to go there. I would give this a 3.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, I'd give it a 3 as well.
You both trumped Greg and his 4 out of 10 score on this review. That by far is the lowest scored episode of Dexter pretty much we've ever given. And it sounds like it was totally deserved. What surprised me was when I saw so many people that were just loving this finale, and I just didn't understand, because most of the people that I know didn't. And I'd be curious if there is anyone out there who listens to this that actually really enjoyed the finale. Maybe, you know, send us some feedback. Let us know what the reason was for that. That what did you think was different, or what did you interpret differently than we did between the reviewer on our site and Bronstum and Edmund here. But to say the least, that really does drop this season down to the lowest scored season of Dexter. Unfortunately, it did not end on a high note. That's probably putting it somewhat mildly. But there we are. Okay, well, that was all that I had in terms of the quick hits. And though I guess we can turn over a little bit for some updates as to what we've all been up to. And Bronstum, it's been a while since you've been able to tell us anything, so why don't you go ahead and jump in? Ooh. Or not. Okay, well then, fine.
Or not.
You, Edmund.
Movie-wise, I finally got to see The World's End. I've been holding off since I had not actually seen Hot Fuzz yet, so even though they're not a true trilogy, I felt I should at least see them in order. And both of them I really enjoyed. I mean, I don't know if it's just more that the subjects in Hot Fuzz and World's End are sort of more stuff I usually, you know, I probably prefer to watch as opposed to horror and zombie things. But I actually think with all three films, they were kind of, it was kind of the, you know, Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg were just getting better and better as they went along. It was very surprising with The World's End, sort of how they managed to sort of combine this, exploring, you know, this group of guys and going through their, you know, a little bit of midlife crisis, you know, with then this over the top, science fiction. Despite our spoiler warnings, I mean, this is one where I'm not going to say too much about the plot, because you really do need to see it, and I don't want to give away, you know, stuff that there are some twists and turns there, which it's much much better to experience.
But you warned them at the beginning.
Yes, I know, but since I do the warnings, I can make the exception. But I will say that it is. Very good, and a very, very fitting conclusion to the Cornetto trilogy. Certainly much better than Dexter pulled off. So, on the comic book front, I've been sort of continuing dipping into sort of more noirish comics. Thanks to my local library, since it is nice to sometimes sample things without having to actually buy them. But picked up Ed Brubaker's Fatale, and as in the femme kind, and I'm about halfway through that. That's been really enjoyable. And of course, this was the week the latest issue of Saga came out, so I'm actually now having to suffer through jonesing through each month until it comes out. So it was a pleasure when I started, and there were about 10 episodes in, but now it's just sort of waiting for that fix, and then being very disappointed when I get to the last page, since they're getting very good at sort of cliffhangering things, so and making you really really want to read the next issue right away. So Also, in one of the offshore projects, which we will be getting to see soon, which I've gotten completely obsessed by, is I started picking up The Almighty Johnsons, and which actually just concluded its third series yesterday. And there's no word yet on whether or not they're actually being renewed, but it will be coming to Sci-Fi soon, I think in the new year, possibly. And I'm going to have a lot of fun watching it all again when it shows up again over here. So it's really a very good series, and another one where kind of like Cornetto trilogy, it just kept getting better and better as it goes along. So, and you know, that has not been picked up for a fourth series, and the way they ended the third one, it you know, they were obviously going on the presumption that there's a good chance they will not be, and actually did bring it to a decent conclusion. You know, they, you know, although they did leave a little out in case you know, all of the fan pressure that's trying to be exerted right now actually convinces TV New Zealand to bring it back. But at the very least, we're going to have three fun seasons to watch over here.
Mm, very cool. Brownstorm, let's see if he got back in.
Can you hear me? I'm coming in live from somewhere that apparently has really bad internet reception.
Yes, apparently.
Or should I take that as a no?
Yeah, we can hear you. This is going to go over.
With lag, apparently.
Yeah, it's still with a lag. That's all right. We'll work something out. Well, when Bronstum can hear us, he can jump in at any time to go ahead and tell us what he's been up to, other than trying to figure out how to get the damn internet to work over there.
What I've been doing is mostly working last couple of weeks. But be catching up on sort of a few shows as they come out, new and returning stuff. Let's see, the premiere of Brooklyn Nine-Nine I thought was really, really funny. As many predicted, Andre Brower is what makes that show work. Just super dry kind of sense of humor in the midst of like a lot of wacky characters is really, really fun. Castle is back, and that's still a really fun show. The first episode of the new How I Met was surprisingly not terrible. In fact, I actually quite enjoyed it. I think they're doing a good job of making the introduction of the mother worth the 8-year wait. I still think it was an insane amount of time to wait, but now we actually get to meet her. Just like, you know what? Yeah, okay, fair enough. We'll let you pass on this one. And then the actual episodes themselves were pretty solid. And yeah, other than that, I've been doing or watching a whole lot else.
Hmm. Okay. And Gary, how about you? What you been up to?
Let's see. Much like Edmund, I did go to see World's End. I'll respect his wish to not spoil things too much, with the exception of saying there is a hard turn in the movie. It comes pretty much right at the point it needs to come, and it takes a serious movie to funny, and it really was enjoyable. And although Edmund didn't mention it, I made sure to go to a bar right afterwards. it seemed appropriate after seeing that movie, and once you see it, you'll understand.
But just one?
This bar had 300 different beers, and 95 of them were on tap. So.
Oh, okay, that counts, yeah.
So the only thing that was missing was Lexi from Haven?
Pretty much.
Yeah, sounds
pretty
like
pretty much. It.
Okay.
That I saw. I watched the new CBS show, Hostages. Ouch. I wanted it to be a miniseries because I can't imagine that they're going to drag this thing out for a whole season with these poor people stuck in their house. But anyway, we'll see. I get the feeling there's supposed to be drama, suspense, and intrigue, but I really felt none of those. Dylan McDermott, I've always had issues with his acting personally, but he seems flatter than ever in this show, and it was disappointing that they probably paid decent money to have him as the star, and he seems like he's walking through it. But that's just my opinion. On the bookends, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, but I picked up a whole bunch of the Mirror Universe series Star Trek books, and I'm on my third one right now. I've gone through Glass Empires, Obsidian Alliances, and now I'm on Shards and Shadows, and I have two more after this. And it's as you would expect, it's an alternate take on familiar characters. One thing that I'm enjoying, though, is, and I didn't expect this going in, was not only do you get, of course, you know, the original show, Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, but you also get Mackenzie Calhoun, and you're even getting the mentions of the Vanguard series as well, which surprises me that they are bringing in so many of these non-television parts of the franchise into this series, which is it's quite enjoyable to get these different takes on the characters, especially, for example, the new Frontier series with Mackenzie Calhoun is still written by Peter David. So, you know, you're getting the creator and the author to, you know, actually write the story. So you really have that sort of voice of the character still present, even in this skewed universe. So I guess I'd call them more novellas. There's two or three stories per books, and but they're quite an enjoyable read. And I guess for most people who read Star Trek books, I'm just flying through them. So it's very enjoyable. I wouldn't call it heavy reading, but it's still fun. Imagine a good episode on TV, and that's about the what it engenders when you're reading these novels. Trying to think what else. I got a sample from a friend of mine of William Shatner's new album as well. I doubt it'll be winning any Grammy awards, but it's that sort of talk speech thing he does when he's singing anymore. At least he's done his last few albums, and it's if you like Shatner, you'll like it, and if you don't, you're not going to stand for it at all. I'm trying to think what anything else interesting. No, that's about it. It's been a little bit quiet on the front otherwise.
Okay. Let's see. On my end, I guess a lot of my time, other than running around, it seems quite a bit, has been catching up on some reading myself. I read a Star Wars novel, actually, that I needed to catch up on. It was called Scoundrels by Timothy Zahn. And it was essentially a story that was focused on Han Solo, Lando, and many others of his ilk, shall we say, between episodes 4 and 5, when he was, you know, almost immediately after episode 4, or the original Star Wars, depending on how you want to look at it. But this was basically, imagine a somewhat less principled version of Ocean's 11, set in the Star Wars universe, and you kind of get the idea of what kind of book this was. I was a little surprised that I kind of found myself losing interest here and there, but there were some interesting twists along the way, and it actually made me wish that some of these characters would show up in other books or even, you know, in future movies or something. So it at least managed to create some characters that were good enough that I wanted to see more of them. But overall, for a Timothy Zahn book, I found that it just wasn't quite up to par. Beyond that, I've been, of course, playing a lot of video games, actually. Some might say I spent some time over Labor Day weekend actually finishing up a lot of games that I had been very close to finishing, and probably made it look like I was doing nothing but staying up all day or all night and playing games. But once I cleared the decks a little bit, I decided to try a couple games out. The first one that I tried out was Doctor Who: The Eternity Clock. I had heard that this was not the best game ever created, that's for sure. And it is rough. It's basically a side-scrolling type platforming game with a lot of puzzles. A lot of puzzles. And I was kind of doing fine until I got to a level where River is dealing with the silence. And I'm pretty much at a point where I can't figure out how to get past this, because anytime that the silence kind of disappear from the screen, it reboots you back to the beginning of the level, you know, appropriately enough. However, they disappear so quickly that there's no way to actually get to the next checkpoint. So, yeah, I find it rather difficult. So I stopped trying to do that, and I moved over to Mass Effect 2, which I'm having a lot more fun with. It's a much better game. So I'm a good amount into that, but still have barely scratched the surface after, you know, 19, 20 hours into the game, because these are very deep games, and enjoying it quite a bit. I like the fact that, much like the first game, it has a lot of time and effort spent in allowing you to mold the morality of your character. But one thing that I have noticed is that, yes, you do have a lot of different ways that you can approach situations, but I think sometimes they're a little too on the nose as to whether or not this is supposed to be the quote-unquote paragon or good response or the quote-unquote somewhat evil renegade response. I would almost prefer that you not really even know which one is going to give you the outcome of Paragon or Renegade, that you just kind of naturally make decisions based on some relatively vague choices, and then depending on the outcome, then you kind of figure out what's going to happen. But it's not a major complaint. It's just, it's so hard for these studios to come up with a good morality system. I find they try very hard in this game, and it works well enough for me, but it is one of those deals where, you know, you can pretty much tailor your responses to get what you want out of it versus just letting it flow naturally and then finding out that you were playing it a little more off the cuff and questionably than, say, doing things the, you know, honorable and virtuous way, so to speak. But I'm having a lot of fun, and obviously there are a lot of people on the VOG network that have played the Mass Effect games. I mean, Travis was at Dragon Con in his N7 armor. There we are. But, having lots of fun with that. And keeping up with some of the Fifth Doctor stuff along the way. Gary, were you just trying to interject?
Well, yeah, John. While we're on the topic of video games, I wanted to talk a little bit about the big gorilla that's out right now, Grand Theft Auto V, and some of the stuff I've been reading and hearing about. You know, I realize that I hear some people say, "Oh, wow, yeah, it's like super realistic." I said, "Really? When does anything like that game ever happen to you at all?" And they're like, "Oh, well, that's a good point." And then I read these different stories, and I have no reason to believe they're not true. 10 and 12 year old kids reading this, and you know, of course it does have the mature label on it, but I sort of get the impression that game stores and stuff just don't really uphold that. Do you know, like, what is the sort of reasoning behind it? Like are they required to not sell it to somebody, or you know, is it like look the other way and just give me the cash?
The game is I'm not 100% sure what the rating is in the US, but this issue has been cropping up here in Australia because we only just had an R18 plus thing introduced for video games. Before, everything above, you know, teenager, you know, you had, you know, the young rating for youngsters, the rating for sort of like, you know, teenage, you know, young, whatever, and then everything above that was MA 15 plus, or it wasn't rated at all, and therefore not allowed to be sold, which led to a lot of things, like a lot of games, things like zombie games and whatnot, were getting very heavily nerfed. I think the Walking Dead video game, they originally had no plans to release it properly in Australia. For the longest time, Aussies could only get it through by using Steam, which is an international thing. So they've only just brought it in semi-recently, and therefore Grand Theft Auto V is the first game in the Grand Theft Auto series to be given an R18 plus rating, even though if they were going to go back retrospectively, really all of the Grand Theft Auto games would get that same rating. But there's just not been that this much demand for a video game that has those restrictions. And while retailers are supposed to basically ask for ID and not sell to anyone who can't prove they're over the age of 18, a lot of them aren't really used to doing that. And then you get others that just think that's kind of stupid and will just sell to whoever. And then you get this subsection that just re-flummoxes me of parents who will go out and buy the game for their young kids, which just completely boggles the mind because, you know, this game is not for kids.
Well, I'm running across that right now with my son.
it's really not a game for kids. And I've seen more than one comment stuff like that. It's just like, oh, I can't believe the content that they have in this video game that my son is being exposed to. How are they playing it? It's forever 18. Well, I went out and bought it.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize there would be all this kind of filth and whatnot in it. It's like, well, that's what the rating system's for.
And for that matter, the back of the damn box. But anyway, I heard these aren't the kind of games that I particularly enjoy. I mean, obviously, you know, it's. I've said this before that Rockstar just. I appreciate the sandbox games that they do, but they do go into some territory that I just really isn't for me. That's fine. But I did hear on Electric Sisterhood, one of our fellow VOG Network podcasts, that they were playing basically live blogging or live recording while they were playing a section of it, just what I heard them playing was clearly not for children and probably questionable for young teens, let alone, you know, young adults. Would probably be as early as I would get it, because then they could buy it for themselves. Any parent that buys a game called Grand Theft Auto and doesn't know what that is, and it just still just buys it blindly, I'm sorry, you can't blame the studio for that. The commercials pretty much tell the story. I mean, there's no way that you couldn't understand what this was. Now, the stores that are selling this to kids, that's on them, because as far as I know, I don't know if it's federal, but certainly from a state-to-state point of view, there are a lot of states that require them to check ID and not to sell to minors. And I've been in stores where I've gotten games where, for instance, I'd be out with my daughter because she's got, you know, games that she wants to play, and I'll just, you know, combine our stuff. And they'll ask me, you know, is this for you? You know, something like even Assassin's Creed, which is technically M-rated, I think, in the U.S. So it's like, yeah, there are stores that do check, but if they don't, I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's a problem in a lot of states. And I certainly would have a problem with it. If my kids even ask for it, I'd start laughing hysterically and be like, no, no, absolutely not. Here's My Little Pony. But, I mean, yeah, it is a problem, at least in my mind, because what the perception is going to be, to Bronze Thumb's point, is that, oh, those video game people are throwing this stuff out there, and they don't care that kids are going to be exposed to this, and blah, 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 and this is the immorality of the entire industry and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, no, I'm sorry. Do you tell somebody that makes an ultraviolet horror movie that if some stupid parent takes their kid into the movie, it's the movie maker's fault? It's the same difference. In fact, you actually have to go through more hoops to get the game than you do to take a kid to a movie that they're not supposed to be in. So, yeah. Anyway, Gary, that's the long-winded versions of answers to your question.
Yeah, because I'm running into it too, because there's several of my son's contemporaries, my son's 11, that are out there playing that game, and, you know, I've had pressure. Dad, my friends are playing it. You know, I'm going to be the uncool, unkid kid who's not going to know what they're talking about. And as I talk to people who I know, and I admit I'm not a huge gamer, they're playing this, and they tell me about some of the typical things that occur during this movie, during this TV show, not TV show, but this video game. I'm like, no, you're never playing this, you know, at least not till you're like, you know, 17, 18 years old. I don't want you anywhere near stuff like that. It may be a little protective, but from what everything I hear, and I have no reason to dispute it, it's pretty hardcore.
Oh, it is. Definitely. And that's what Rockstar Games are pretty much known for. So, again, this is the fifth version of this game. How are people surprised that this is what it is? And I'd be curious, you know, like, do you ask the parents of these other kids, like, so do you know what your kid is playing? It's like, it's basically, your kid is playing something that makes Game of Thrones look like puppy dogs. I mean, it's...
like Annie. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty harsh. I mean, it... yeah, I don't understand why anybody would get this for an 11-year-old, and I think that, again, it would be kind of questionable to get this for even, like, a 14- or 15-year-old. Granted, they would probably find a way to do it themselves at that point, but then, even then, it's like, I'm not going to actually facilitate this. You know, it's...
well, I think a lot of people think it's a racing game.
Okay.
Or well, a car theft game. I'm telling you, because I have not confronted any of my son's friends' parents about this thing, I don't think they're that twisted that they would typically let their children play this if they had a full understanding of what the game entailed.
Yeah, it's the Grand Theft Auto games, it's the title, it's there in the title. Yeah, a big part of it is about, you know, driving, but it's also about crime. It is a game that puts the player in the shoes of a generally a rather violent criminal, give the character the opportunity to be very, the player the opportunity to be very, very violent as they break the law and commit crimes and stuff like that. And yeah, I get the impression that there's people who still don't quite get that, and are in for a bit of a rude awakening at some point.
May I be so bold as to say that this may be another one of those situations, and maybe not so far removed from comic books, where there's this impression out there that video games are for kids, despite the fact that there's a lot of parents that grew up with them.
Yeah, it's the exact same kind of problem.
Yeah, and it's like, wait a second. Number one, there are a lot of parents that grew up in the video game age, so I don't buy that at all. But, yeah, I mean, even if you did take that into consideration, then is it just assumed that all games are good for all kids? But would you assume that of a movie? Like, if a kid said that, oh, hey, I want to watch this, wouldn't you check what it was? It just doesn't make any sense to me. This comes down to, and I mean, just like so many other things, parents should know what their kids are getting into. You know, you give them a little more freedom as they get older, but up to a certain age, you gotta at least have awareness of what it is that they're doing so you can parent. I mean, don't just... Something especially that... My God, these games take hours upon hours upon hours to do. You tell me that the parents never walk in at any time to see what this game is about? But at any rate, this is... I definitely would have a problem with that. And I would be like, well, guess what? If that makes you the uncool kid, then you're the uncool kid. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. I gotta be why not? Oh well. Anyway, that's the job I signed on for. So I'll
exactly
go through
right.
it. But I was like, oh no. I'll take it. It's just like I'm just surprised that any of his contemporaries are actually playing it. It's as you said, maybe it's more of a state thing that decides who gets it, or it's hopefully the common sense of the video game seller, but oh well. Anyway, it's sad that while I can appreciate and respect that they want to put out a game for adults to play that involve adult things and then some in some cases with this franchise, but they really need to make more of an effort to keep it out of children's hands. I don't know that the ratings is quite enough.
It's this cultural thing. It's a lot like with comic books. It's a lot like with animation, although animation's been growing out of it a lot more in the last 5 years with things like Family Guy and stuff like that, where despite the way that we look at television and movies, there is this assumption that it's a juvenile medium, that anything made for it will be appropriate for kids because it's a medium for kids, and therefore there is shock when if something's not. Hopefully that's gonna go away. Hopefully we'll get a bit better how we manage these sorts of things.
I don't know what the solution is, but I don't want there to be some onus on the creators necessarily to keep it out of the wrong hands, because there has to be culpability and responsibility and accountability on the part of those who are supplying it, whether it's the store or the parent at the end of the day. Is the rating system sufficiently obvious to people? I don't know. I don't even know if they put it on the front or the back. I'm at least, I'm kind of aware enough of what a game is that I can tell without having to look at the rating system whether or not, my kids are supposed to be playing it. But that's me. Do they need to put it more prominently on the front? Like, should it say on the front cover of Grand Theft Auto V, not for kids? or what? I mean, really?
When it's that blatant like that, I don't think that that's that unreasonable. I'm not saying it needs to take up the front cover, but I think it's one of those things where the little M box just sort of is just fades and people don't really pay attention to it.
Yeah,
although maybe one solution might be, and I know it's not a perfect solution, but maybe as more and more games start to go online, and even more so, that there'll be some adult check of some kind. I won't say it's going to be foolproof, but if you have to start having accounts for everything anymore, maybe there's some way to, the adults will have accounts and maybe the kids won't be able to.
Well, quite frankly, I mean, let me just give you an example real quick before we wrap up this episode. If you're on, say, PlayStation, because that's the one that I know best, everybody can have their own account up to a certain number, I'm sure. But like, for instance, each of my kids has their own account. Now, as the main user, my account is the one that comes up right away, but I can lock out anything that I want, especially if it's a download game, so that you need to know the code in order to play it, or even see the any information about it, for that matter. It pretty much locks you out completely. Now, that seems like a fairly easy solution. But again, it kind of forces the parent or whoever to go on and actually use the system that is there and to have the awareness to do something about it. Now, should there be some kind of age verification? Now, if you buy it on there, that there is a certain amount of age verification that takes place. Of course, I'll be honest, you probably know as well as I do that age verification on the internet?
Nearly useless.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Again, I think it ultimately comes down to parents have to police what their kids are doing to some degree. So that's at least my opinion, and
I think that's what it really comes down to. You got to keep an eye on what your kid's doing, if that's your case, or not even that, but it may sound crazy, but there will be adults who won't care for this fare either. So by finding out what it entails, you might save yourself the cost of the video game.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's not my kind of game, so. You know, knowing that, I'm not going to waste my money, even though everybody and their brother wants to play it and it's a huge success already. It's like, okay, that's great. I'm glad you like it. It's just not my thing. Now, similarly, I'm the kind that, I'll play certain games in front of the kids, but then other games I won't. Like, I will not play The Last of Us in front of the kids. That's for sure. Or The Walking Dead. I mean, they can't handle that kind of thing, but...
Yeah, and it's a very different... Those games are examples of... they absolutely fall in the same category as something like Grand Theft Auto in terms of how appropriate they are for certain age groups and whatnot, but it's all for completely different reasons.
Yeah.
The Last of Us is a very intense game, both in terms of, as you play it, they put a lot of effort into trying to scare the pants off you. And the content in terms of what the characters have to deal with and go through and whatnot is very, it's very charged. So it's a completely different experience to something like Grand Theft Auto, but for very, very similar reasons, you would not necessarily make that sort of freely available to very young gamers.
Exactly. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...